Now, just before we begin, I would like to mention that in line with our recent updates to our website, brochure, and more recently, our investor briefing document, we have also decided to update how this conference call works. After discussing with Patrick and Ruby, we decided that we've spent enough time telling you the same definitions of an ETR or an RSA, and we want to do things a little differently. If anybody is listening to this for the first time, please let us know. And at the end, if you wish to have an overview of the product, I can explain it at the end. Also, we would really welcome any feedback from the audience on this new style. So we want to make this more relevant to what we are trading on a daily basis, so you have a better understanding of what we are actually doing. And also to make it more interesting for you to listen to. If this new style doesn't work and you prefer the old way, please let us know and we can revert. So as part of the new style, I will now pass you over to Ruby to get us underway.
Thanks, Andrew. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the month one Investable ETR briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of January 2023 to the 31st, and for our new style of ETR briefings. Firstly, for those of you that don't have the briefing document at hand, I'll show it to you and explain how the new format works. Towards the end of the briefing, he'll get into more detail in the document. Next, we'll take a look at a recent shipping trade we financed and also a long-running key infrastructure projects in the UK that are traded with us. With it being a year since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, we will look at what effect this has had on our current energy crisis. There will also be our monthly segment on the state of the European and global economies. And as mentioned, we will end with a quick look to our new briefing document. So now for our first topic, I will hand you back to Andrew.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Ruby. So, and as Ruby mentioned, we will begin today with a quick look at our redesigned document. So, which you should see on your screen now. So we have redesigned the style of the briefing while keeping the information the same as before. It's just presented in a new modern, and as you can see from our graphs, a more informative way. You may notice that our pie chart is showing the diversification of our investments is now gone and has been replaced with our new donut graphs. So the shaded section in each of these comes together to 100%, showing the full diversification of where your clients' funds are invested. We have given the credit index a more prominent position within the document, which reflects the importance of this stat to our company. And our other sections have been given their own table so each can be clearly distinguished. As with this new style of briefing conference call, any feedback on the new layout of the document would also be much greatly appreciated. And I will return to this, as Ruby said, at the end of the briefing. So, and now for our first topic, that are the several recent transactions that we financed for an originator for the shipping of rice and the future market for this. To be specific, these were two rice export shipments from India to Cameroon and Benin in Africa. They were also our first shipments where we financed the shipping of rice. When we fund the hire or charter these vessels, the payment terms is always the same. It's before break bulk or triple B, which means credits are settled before the discharge of the cargo. In all charter party recaps, there is a lien over the cargo until the voyage or shipping costs are paid. And as you'd imagine, the value of the cargo far outweighs the cost of shipping, often 10 times the value depending on the cargo. These trades are a great example of our trade finance deals that are financed by your investors. The originator, based in Greece, is a very experienced shipping firm. The deal desk that Patrick manages first engages with the originator, and once progressed through the deal desk, the application is either rejected or is passed to the trade desk. Trade desk then completes a full risk assessment of the originator, its past performance, its experience shipping, and also its AML and KYC. Once these are accepted, the originator is then invited to complete their application and ultimately become an originator. This originator commenced trading with us in July 2022, and since commencement, they have traded over $13.2 million worth of debtor finance and $12.7 million worth of supplier finance that we have settled in line with our expectations. They specialize in dry bulk shipping, transporting goods such as grain, coal, and in this case, rice. They frequently appear as the largest trade of the month, and this month is no exception. The first of the two trades for them this month was our single largest trade for January at $3.92 million, with cargo valued at $15.5 million. Again, there's a lien on the cargo until shipping is paid. In fact, many brokers joke that they look forward to the day that they are actually not paid. This originator also had the largest trade in December of last year. That was a coal export shipment from Maputo Port, Mozambique, to India. The trade itself was for 1.25 million euro, with cargo valued at $3.85 million. Along with this, also taking the largest trade for the month, their debtors also frequently appear in the top 10 largest holdings list. They had debtors on the list for December and November, which are both settled at this time. The second of these trades was also a rice export from India and was valued at $950,000. India is currently the world's biggest rice exporter and accounts for over 40% of the global rice trade. And in 2022, they hit a record high. India's rice exports in 2022 rose 3.5% from a year ago to 22.26 million tons, or more than the combined exports of the next four largest exporters: Thailand, Vietnam, Pakistan, and the United States. Iran is traditionally the biggest buyer of Indian rice, and along with other Middle Eastern countries like Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and the United Arab Emirates, they account for nearly two-thirds of India's rice exports. With it predicted, India could export them more than 4.5 million tons in 2022-23 financial year. That started on April 1st, 2022. They are up 15% from a year ago. Indian Trade Ministry showed that exports rose by 11% by 2.16 million tons in the first half of 2022-23. A lot of these new exports came from countries trying to have enough reserves in case of any further supply chain disruption. After the Ukraine war, buyers are afraid of a sudden supply disruption, with every buyer trying to have enough stocks, said Vijay Satya, the former president of the All India Rice Exporters Association. And when there was a sharp drop in freight charges last year, this further prompted importers to buy more. This, coupled with the global inflation, led to local prices of rice in India rising dramatically, along with the export price. Export prices for the grain have jumped to over $1,450 per tonne, from around $1,160 per tonne a year ago. All this extra activity and price inflation led to a surprise announcement from the Indian government to impose a 20% duty on exports of white and brown rice in September 2022. And banned broken rice sales abroad. The Indian government are now considering lifting these restrictions as local prices have cooled and concerns over food inflation have eased. Shares in Indian rice producers and exporters have started to surge on expectations that any change in shipment rules will potentially boost their sales. KRBL Limited, one of the biggest shippers, share price climbed as much as 3.2%, while LT Foods share price rose 4%, and Shaman La Satya Exports share price rose 5.4% on foot of this news. These latest developments in the Indian rice market, coupled with the growing demand for rice exports, makes it a great time to be involved with getting involved with this supply chain. This originator is a great indicator of how Patrick and the board have successfully led the company to finding higher quality and value ETR. We have since traded again with this originator and hope that between us, we can further tap into this rice market and other shipping export markets around the globe. Another originator that is UK registered has been trading on the exchange for almost 2 years. In 2022, they won significant infrastructure contracts in the UK with three large joint ventures who have each undertaken three segments of the new high-speed rail link being built to link London to the northwest of Britain, otherwise known as HS2. Since commencement, this originator has traded over £91 million in debtor finance and £8.5 million in trade finance. While they trade invoices on our system daily, they had one trade in particular from January that I wanted to highlight. They traded a single invoice for $2.3 million on their debtor Scanza Costain JV, or joint venture. SCS are present on our list of top 10 largest investable holdings for the month of January. And this is the second month in a row on that list, as they were also present on the list for December. The originator are approved for BTR or trade finance, and recently we purchased 167,000 meters squared worth of concrete, which was valued just below £1.5 million. And this facility will be repaid as the concrete is used in February, March and April. And that is actually just for a very small section of the HS2 rail link. The enormity of the resources required for this project are hard to put into detail, but for fans of the latest series of Jeremy Clarkson's farm, you'll be familiar when he struggles to get concrete for his farm, as he was told it's all going to HS2. SCS are one of three debtors that our originator has executed contracts for the HS2 project. Between these three debtors alone, the total forecasted amount to trade is over £95 million. With nearly £50 million of that yet to be traded on the exchange. These are government-funded projects and great to have as debtors on our system. And especially for SCS, since this contract is the first debtor availing of a new payment system known as project-backed accounts, or PBAs. So these are used in order to provide greater payment protection for the supply chain and specifically subcontractors like our originator. Using PBAs, HS2 ensures that SCS have a segregated project bank account for paying their HS2 suppliers. This limits then SCS mingling any HS2 payments with other parts of their business. And then the HS2 payments are ring-fenced and only paid to their HS2 supply chain and subcontractors. They provide greater transparency and faster payments at all levels of the supply chain. This is great to hear and means that contracts trading with faster payment terms will allow our credit index to improve even further. And as you all know, the credit index is the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to settle. Our credit index, as you can see from the briefing document, was 68 for January. This is the second lowest figure for this since January 2019, which is great to see and a credit to our teams. The credit index is one of our economic indicators that our market, meaning the one we're trading, is in a very healthy position. So, as we've now arrived towards the end of February, we've recently passed the mark of a year since Russia invaded Ukraine, which also marks the beginning where inflation and energy prices began to soar and the energy crisis really began to take hold. Electricity costs in Ireland almost doubled and gas price reached a record high, though thankfully, the outlook is beginning to change. With wholesale energy costs falling, we've seen the first providers begin to offer more attractive offers to households. Last month, Flowgas became the first energy supplier in almost 3 years to offer a fixed energy deal in the Irish market. This move was seen as an indication that the worst of the energy price rises was coming to an end. This was then followed by the first electricity price cut in 3 years by the independent operator Pinergy, when they broke ranks to deliver a price reduction of 7.1% from the end of March. Larger providers are yet to follow suit, as they claim to be locked into long-term future contracts, which some claim will take nearly 2 years to unwind. These reductions then are a sign of normality returning to the energy market, and with the one-year anniversary of the beginning of the war just passing, it is timely that the wholesale gas and electricity prices have plunged back to levels last seen before Russia invaded Ukraine. But the energy crisis has not gone away, and market reforms for the sector are still needed. With renewable energy never more important and ESG investing rising in popularity and significance, it makes finding these projects or new energy sources even more valuable in the long run. While our renewable energy sector is improving, and as per Wind Energy Ireland's latest monthly report, Irish wind farms set a new record for the most electricity ever produced in January, up 9% on January 2022, when they produced 41% of the country's power last month. But as warnings from the industry about slow delivery of new systems, it is still vital to find further suppliers of gas. And even though we've reached the year mark of the Russia-Ukraine war, does not seem to be an end in sight just yet, with Putin appearing to prepare Russia for a long war. This is then all backed up by the recent seaborne reports. It is mentioned in their report how Russia will cut oil output by 500,000 barrels per day, or about 5% of their output in March. Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak announced that this was in response to the West imposing price caps on Russian oil and oil products. The EU imposed a cap in December on shipments of Russian refined oil products as part of a G7 effort to cut Moscow's export revenues. Ambassadors from the 27 EU states agreed at a meeting to limit the price of premium products such as diesel at $100 a barrel and that of low-end products, including fuel oil, at $45 a barrel. The caps will allow shipping companies carrying Russian oil products to access Western insurance and financing only if they pay less than the prescribed level. This announcement by Russia caused the price of Brent crude oil to rise by more than 2.5% on the day to $86.6 per barrel. While Russia continues to play these economic games with the West, it has also led countries like Germany to source resources elsewhere. As also mentioned in Seaborne's latest report, Germany are in advanced talks to sign a long-term deal for liquefied natural gas, or LNG, for at least the next 10 years, as they continue to search for an alternative to the Russian fuel supplies. One such alternative could be the US. As a separate article in the recent Seaborne report discusses how US LNG producers are poised to start production in three new export plants. This is due to these three plants claiming to have found enough customers to receive financial approvals this year. This would then make the US the world's largest LNG exporter for years to come. Seaborne's report then holds steady their figures from previous, with both the Handymax and Panamax set to lose 15% of their fleet in the next 5 years, with not enough production to replace them. And to finish off this section, there's also an article in their report echoing my comments from earlier regarding the Indian exports restrictions, with a decision by the end of March expected on the continuation of them. If we then look to the Baltic Index, it again continued its downward spiral for January, starting at 1,227 and ending at 674, with it currently at 935 today. This is reflective in the current spot price of our ship owners at $6,600. Thankfully, this negative outlook isn't shared by the FFA markets as they are increasing for dates throughout the coming year, with Q2 at $14,000 and Q3 at $14,700. Hopefully, this down period can come to an end and recover for the latter part of the year. This outlook of an FFA market somewhat resembles the economic outlook throughout Europe. We seem to have passed the peak of the hyperinflation with positive but cautious outlooks on the horizon. Our inflation in Ireland was 7.8% for January 2023, which was down from 8.2% in December 2022. This is the third consecutive month that inflation has fallen in Ireland, and this is a direct result of the continuation of the ECB's commitment to increase interest rates. While Ireland leads the way within Europe with reducing inflation, the Eurozone is currently measuring inflation for January at 8.5%, which is a reduction from 9.2% in December. Even with these reductions in inflation, the ECB, though, seems to be showing no signs of slowing down with their interest rate hikes. They raised their interest rate to 3% earlier this month, with investors betting that the European Central Bank will raise interest rates to all-time highs, spurred on by the Eurozone economy's resilience. ECB Governing Council member Isabel Schnabel warned the bank was still far away from being able to declare victory in the battle against inflation, and that a broad disinflation process has not even started. These comments have led brokers such as Goldman Sachs to predict, in addition to an increase of 50 basis points in March and 25 basis points in May, a further estimate of 25 basis point hike in June. Even with these further rate hikes on the horizon, Ireland's economic outlook remains positive, and a report from last week by the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, Ireland recorded the strongest level of economic growth in the industrialised bloc of OECD countries in the final quarter of last year. A GDP growth of 3.5% was recorded, and this means Ireland's GDP for 2022 was 12.2%, which was more than treble the EU average. Stats like these are what have led Davy to predict a further increase in the credit rating for the Irish state. This comes after Ireland saw its creditworthiness raised by a number of rating agencies last year, as its debt burden continues to decline at pace relative to the size of the economy. Moody's has an A1 rating in Ireland, which is a 4 rungs below its top-notch AAA grade rating. So an increase would bring the country to AAA2. Fitch and Standard & Poor's have each assigned ratings that are equivalent to 1 rung higher than Moody's. These actions are a nice change to the outlook that was predicted for most of 2022. What was a bigger surprise is that the UK's public sector unexpectedly posted a surplus in January. A surplus of 5.4 billion sterling was posted, compared to the deficit that was predictive of 7.8 billion. This also goes against the long and sharp recession that was predicted for the UK, and with Schroders fund manager Andy Brough believing that the economy is holding up better than feared. Though, like the ECB, the Bank of England are not resting on their laurels. They are reportedly going to use this unexpected bounce and further increase interest rates, with an increase to 4.25% predicted in March. Hopefully, these changes in forecasts can come to fruition and will allow companies like our originators to continue to trade and even increase their trading. With credit in a strong place and now the predictions that the market won't be anywhere as worse feared, this creates a favourable position that we should be able to capitalise on and maximise our trading. So as we move to the last section then, as Ruby explained, this is going to involve an overview of the new briefing document, which you can see on screen. So after having the same style for multiple years, we wanted to present this in a new revamped style. The same information is still there. You will still see the figures showing the active RSA of 92.52 million with 64.53 million fully allocated in the first section. Our lists of top 10 largest holdings and top 10 rated holdings are still here, but presented in newly designed graphs. The biggest change, that is the removal of the pie chart in the performance sector and replaced with the individual donut graphs for different sectors. If we look to the performance sector, we see that 2022 month one versus 2023 month one was up 66.73% at 16.03 million. For month one 2023 compared when it was 9.62 million euro in 2022. Volumes continue to remain down by 12.94% as the value to volume ratio increases in line with the higher value and quality traded ETR. Investor funds recall for 779.8 thousand euro, and this eased redemptions by 30%. Our trend section also is redesigned in line with our new theme, even though the redemptions eased, as explained, to 700, just short of 780,000. The demand, though, continues to remain below where it should be, and the deal desk continues to seek additional funding from institutional investors. Although it is too early to call, several funds and banks are engaged in discussions with the team. Bank deposit yields are at between 0% and 0.5%, where the trade desk rates for investors' yields from ETR in month one averaged circa 3%. And as before, the briefing document ends with a repeat of the RSA figure of 92.52 million euro. And that concludes the monthly briefing for January 2023. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for that, Andrew. I think everything I predicted that we were going to have a very unpleasant 2023 and obviously got it wrong. But always good to be wrong in the case of predicting a recession and finding out that that's not the case. But I was talking to one chap who had just come back from Beijing, where he was saying that they have opened up the whole Chinese economy. But the big concern now is that, and everybody's back to work, but the big concern is now that apparently they have another wave of it coming, and it's expected in the next month or two coming into the summer. So I'm guessing, I don't know, but I'm guessing a lot of this demand is driven by the Chinese going back to work. But if they have another one of those COVID problems, then it's going to go backwards. So we just obviously need to be mindful of that and keep an eye on it. But very good briefing. Thank you very much.
And as always, if anybody has any questions, you are just on mute. So please remember to unmute yourself first. Unmute.
Okay. Nice document too, even though I had a hand in it.
Yeah, it looks good, Patrick. Well done.
Well, you can actually give most of the compliments to Andrew. It just goes to show when you put professionals onto these things, they can do a lot better than what we've been using, which is an in-house creation from a long time ago. But that does look a lot better and user-friendly and probably will be more useful when you're out meeting clients, actually.
Yeah, it looks well, actually. It reads easy.
Yeah. All right.
Andrew, Thomas, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, Andrew, just actually, you were very well done. Yeah, it does look a bit more slicker in fairness, and it's a lot easier read, Patrick. But just was wondering there, the instance you gave in relation to the company who helped buy concrete in advance, like, how were they buying concrete to that degree in such advance? Because they felt there was a good price, or?
I suppose they needed it. It was for use that it actually needed. It was needed to be used. So, and it's been delivered, I think it was being delivered, as I mentioned, it was February, March and April. It was being delivered in three kind of tranches. So what they had to prepay for it was when the deal was created, that they wanted that amount, they had to pre-order it. And I think that links into that the resources for especially concrete are so competitive and scarce at the moment, because a lot of it is going, everybody's competing to get it.
Okay, and then just we'll say, when you're talking about these, you know, the company that's involved there in moving rice, exporting rice to Cameroon and things like that, and, you know, basically $3 million in relation to cargo worth 15, is it when it lands, basically, if all goes wrong, it's great to be able to, you know, be told that something pretty much, you lent out 4 million and it's worth 15. So, you know what I mean? Basically, it's about a quarter of it, loan to value. But what I was just there basically thinking, though, is that if it all goes wrong, is it easy to get this? Like, you know what I mean? The cargo, is it then worth 15 million? Like anything, you know, if you have assets against something for a loan going wrong, and then when it does, you'll find that the value more often than not doesn't relate back to actually what you hold or what it was valued at. So I suppose in the circumstances of, like, has it been ever a case where someone hasn't paid the money and you've had to go down the route of having to use the value of the cargo, and, like, you know, what was that process, and basically is it easy to get your money back? So that's really what I'm kind of trying to get at.
I don't really know. Yeah. I can answer that. These are actually commodities, so there's an exchange, commodities exchange. There's multiples of them. But when you're carrying a commodity that's worth $100, and the amount of money that's owed against that is $30, the index price for that commodity, if you reroute the vessel, for example, to Rotterdam. Which does happen, but it's very rare. You reroute it to Rotterdam and you sell it on the open market at 20% discount. As soon as the commodity owner, and remember, the commodity owner has paid for that commodity before it goes on board. So they're already out the money, and they know that they're not going to receive that cargo unless they pay for the shipping. It goes all the way back to historically, before international chambers of commerce documents and bills of lading and all that kind of stuff. The ship owner had no idea of what port he was pulling into or who the people were that were there. And they just had a simple rule. You pay us before we discharge the cargo. It's a pretty effective stick and carrot thing. So it's a rare event, and it tends to be a more of a war situation or a collapse of a company or something where the cargo is not shipping of the cargo isn't paid for. I don't know, because, for example, the Ukraine war, but anyone that was due to deliver cargo into Ukraine that knew they weren't getting paid, they just rerouted and sold it on the open market. And yes, they would have recovered multiple times of what their cargo shipping price was, because the cargo itself is worth, at the lowest value cargoes are things like coal, but that's still three or four times the value of the cost of shipping it. So you discount the coal by 10-20%, there'll be countless buyers that'll take it off your hand. So I'm not saying it's a guaranteed or risk-free transaction. Yes, these events do occur. The best example we can give you is there's a company called Cargill. They chartered a ship and to go and pick up cargo in Durban. The risky part of the journey is not when the cargo's on board. It's the sending the ship in ballast, which means empty, to the port to pick up the cargo in the first place. That, to my mind, is the riskiest part of the journey, because what happens if Cargill turns around and says, actually, you know what, we don't want that ship to go there because there's a riot in the port, so we're just going to cancel. We did have that situation, and Cargill ended up they didn't cancel it, by the way. The ship arrived outside Durban, and it sat outside Durban for, I think, about 28 days, maybe a little bit longer. It cost them more than $1 million while they waited for the riots to stop. And then they went into port to collect it. And they had to pay that full million of losses against that cargo shipment. Otherwise, it would have sent a message to the market that Cargill, when they place an order with you to move a ship, they might cancel halfway through. Then no one will ship for them. So it is sort of self-regulating, if there is such a term. We've had those situations. So we know what happens when a ship is held up because of port congestion, or in this case, riots. And to recircle back, the fact that the cargo is not released until payment is made is a kind of a big incentive for the shipper to actually pay for it.
All right. Cheers, Patrick. Thank you for the update.